That's funny. So we're here now, though, for the guiding light. And the guiding light is the time that I read directly from the Bible and share the interpretation that comes to me as I read. And interestingly, when Lynn was talking about 10 or 15 minutes ago, she told a story about Mary and Martha. And we're actually going to start reading about Mary and Martha right now. However, we're not going to start reading at the cleaning story, which is the story that Lynn was telling. We're going to start reading at the death of their brother Lazarus. So today we're going to read about the death of Lazarus, and depending on how much interpretation comes, we may also get to Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. But if we don't get that far today, certainly, oh no, we won't get there next week. Let me tell you about next week. Next week is going to be different. I had asked Ellie Ruzdar if she would be my satsang guest on the third Sunday night of this month, and she said yes. But then she came back to me later and said, oh, Sunday night is not good. She says, can we do it on a weekday afternoon? And so I thought, well, the best time then is this time slot that I'm already on the schedule for. So I asked her if she could do it next week at 2 p.m. Eastern time, and she said yes. So next Wednesday, I will still be here, but we will not do Guiding Light. We also will not do Prayer Circle next week. We're going to have an hour and a half satsang interview with Ellie Ruzdar live. And then that recording I will play on Sunday night during the regular satsang time. So she will be live here in the sanctuary on Wednesday, May 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern time instead of the guiding light. And then I will play the recording on Sunday night, May 15th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, which is our usual monthly satsang. So those who can't make it during the day will still be able to hear that. Okay, so we will have Ellie here next week. All right, so let's just kind of review last week briefly, the guiding lights. Last week, we looked at how to increase our readiness for awakening. And this is kind of an interesting story, you know, right after talking about Ellie Ruzdar, because Ellie Ruzdar was with us about a month or so ago when Lynn interviewed her, and Ellie Ruzdar spent about an hour talking to us about how we may not be ready, right? You may not be ready. In fact, chances are you're not ready. You know, only 1%, maybe less than 1% are actually ready. Everybody else is an experienced seeker. They think that they want truth, but they don't want truth. They just want experience. Y'all remember that talk? So we had Ellie Ruzdar here talking to us about the fact that maybe many of us, in fact, I would say she would not say maybe. I'm being polite. Oops, losing my connection. Hold on 1 second. All right, I think I'm back now. Hopefully y'all can hear me. But what I was saying was Ellie was really saying that many of us, in fact, probably most of us who think that we are serious on the spiritual path and ready for spiritual awakening aren't, that we're fooling ourselves. In fact, Ellie even says, if you want experience, just go have experience. Because she says it's much too painful to be on the spiritual path if you're not really ready for truth, because you're trying to achieve something you cannot achieve. And she says, you know, go back to the regular path, because, you know, there you can set goals and achieve them. You'll be much happier. And so since Ellie spoke about this, one question that people have been asking me is, well, first of all, people had to get over the offense at the idea that they might not be ready. A lot of people felt offended first. A lot of people have confessed that to me. But then they did get over the offense, which I think is great. They got over the offense, and then they said, okay, so this may be true. You know, maybe I'm not as ready as I thought I was. What can I do to increase my readiness? Became the next question, right? That's what Jesus talked about last week when we were here looking at the guiding light. And the real answer is to be right where you're at as fully as you can be, which in a way is what Elie Ruzdahr was telling us. She was saying, if you want experience, then go have experience, right? But let's say that you have a mind full of grievances. You know, you notice your mind constantly talking about people. Maybe right now it's yapping about, you know, I really can't stand the sound of Regina's voice, or I can't stand the sound of Elie Ruzdahr's voice, or whatever, right? And maybe there's something in you that's really tiring of that mind that is always judging, always judging, always judging. And maybe you are at a place where you are really ready to, for lack of better words, learn how to let go of the judging. Well, then focus on that. You know, focus on that. Let that be your current path. Let yourself be guided to those teachings that teach well how to let go of judging. And when there's a teaching that is actually teaching something different, just say, that's not for me right now. You know, don't spread yourself too thin, right? Focus on where you're at right now. And as you focus on where you're at right now, because it's where you're supposed to be, that's why you're called to that. First of all, you're going to be right where you're supposed to be. There's going to be something that feels very right about that. But as you do what is supposed to be done there, this readies you for whatever is to come next. And one disadvantage to our wonderful spiritual information age, including Awakening Together. You know, Awakening Together obviously was put together with all the best intentions. In my opinion, it came directly from Holy Spirit. It didn't even come from me, so it could only have good intentions. Just like A Course in Miracles came into the world with only good intentions, right? But regardless of whether something comes into the world with only good intentions or not, it also can be misused. You know, so A Course in Miracles, we all know, I'm sure, can be misused. Awakening Together can be misused. And so even though Awakening Together came into the world with all good intentions, it was birthed with all good intentions, it can be misused. How can it be misused? It can be misused by, Lynn, cover your ears. I don't know if Lynn will like this. It can be misused by spending too much time here. You know, each speaker that comes into this room is speaking about something different. Well, is the current speaker speaking to you about what you are to be focusing on right now? And if not, should you be here? You know, is there something else you should be doing? Journaling or contemplating another book or meditating, right? I mean, really, what is the best use of your time? Awakening Together was not intended to be a time waster. So we need to ask ourselves, am I using Awakening Together to really help me where I'm at? And therefore move me forward to the next stage naturally. Another disadvantage to Awakening Together is we hear all kinds of teachings here, all kinds of teachings, which means you could say there's something for everyone, but not everything is for anyone. Think about that. What happens when we listen to spiritual teachings that are not pointed to our current stage? Is we often only develop an intellectual understanding of those teachings, and we start parroting those words when we're really not at all ready to live them, we're not at all ready to embrace them, we're not at all ready for them at all. We're, you know, we're back in another stage, and it just becomes a delay mechanism. So what we looked at last week is that the best way to increase your readiness is to know, to discern right where you're at, and then to focus all of your attention on that, to be there. Forget about all of the other stages. Just be there. And as you be right where you're at, to the absolute best of your ability, that naturally increases your readiness, naturally increases your maturity, naturally moves you to the next stage. So that's what we looked at last week. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play a song. I want to say by Jesus. It's not actually by Jesus. It's by whoever wrote Jesus Christ Superstar. But Jesus is the one singing. This is the Gethsemane song. And what's really wonderful about this song, if you listen carefully, you can actually hear in this song Jesus moving from one stage to the next stage. Right in the middle of the song, he shifts. He's in a stage of, you know, what we commonly call resistance, or we call it fear. He's experiencing frustration because he was looking for results from his ministry and he's not seeing the results he thought he would get. He is afraid because what's coming next, of course, in the story is the crucifixion, and he can see the writing on the wall, and he's angry at God. And you know what he does? He fully allows himself to feel all of this. And he's looking at it while he's feeling it, but he's fully allowing himself to feel this. He's not pretending to be anywhere else. And then, right in the middle, boom, he shifts. So let's listen to Jesus in Gethsemane.
I only want to say, if there is a way, take this cup away from me. For I don't want to taste its poison. Feel it burn me, I have changed. I'm not as sure as when we started. Then I was inspired. Now I'm sad and tired. Listen. Surely I've exceeded expectations, tried for 3 years, seems like 30. Could you ask as much from any other man? But if I die, see the saga through, and do the things you ask of me. Let them hate me, hit me, hurt me, nail me to the tree. I'd want to know, I'd want to know my God. Want to know, I'd want to know my God. Want to see, I'd want to see my God. Want to see, I'd want to see my God. Why I should die? Would I be more noticed than I ever was before? Would the things I've said and done matter anymore? I have to know, I have to know my Lord. Have to know, I have to know my Lord. Have to see, I have to see my Lord. Have to see, I have to see my Lord. If I die, what will be my reward? If I die, what will be my reward? Have to know, I have to know my Lord. Have to know, I have to know. I'd be just a little of your omnipresent brain. Show me there's a reason for your wanting me to die. Fight the king, I'm well now, but not so hot on wine. For 3 years, seems like 90. Why then am I scared to finish what I started, what you started? I didn't start it. God, I will start. But you hold every card. I will drink your cup of poison, kneel to your cross and break me. Leave me, beat me, kill me, take me now.
So again, the moral of the story is be honest and be right where you're at fully. And by being right where you're at fully, in fact, Peace Pilgrim would say most people live at the surface of experience. Dive down into your current experience, your current stage, right? Live it fully. And that's what pushes you on to the next stage. Imagine a baby being born. Imagine how fully they have to live that birth experience and it pushes them out into a new world. Imagine if they were able to like only kind of feel the pain. I mean, because there's a lot of pain, I would imagine, in the birth experience for the baby too. So imagine if they could only kind of feel the pain, just a little. They might not ever be born, right? So be where you are. That's how you increase your readiness. All right, so let's start this week's reading. So we're going to read about the death of Lazarus. By the way, Cheryl, can you hear me? Cheryl was saying she could not hear me talk for the last 5 minutes. Can everybody else hear me? Make sure I'm being heard. Yes, Kathy can hear me. Maybe Kathy's the only one that's supposed to hear me. Oh, and Logan can hear me. He's given the little one there. I know that happens in other rooms. I've learned that little code. Oh, look here. NWO soldiers given the one. Yeah, we have these people here that are Pal Talk experts. They know the Pal Talk code. Here in Awakening Together Sanctuary, we are not Pal Talk experts. We just say yes and no. If a friend hadn't told me about the code, I wouldn't even know about it. All right, so here we go. We're going to begin reading The Death of Lazarus, John chapter 11. And for Logan and NWO soldier who know the Pal Talk code but do not know me, be prepared for probably a non-traditional interpretation. But first I'll just read, okay? Here we go. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. And that's just kind of interesting because, you know, a lot of people think that Mary Magdalene did that, right? This is saying, no, it wasn't Mary Magdalene. It was Mary Lazarus' sister. So the sisters went to Jesus. Lord, the one you love is sick. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, let us go back to Judea. But Rabbi, they said, a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you are going back there? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light. After he had said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up. His disciples replied, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better. Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him. Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. All right, so that's the portion of that particular story. So we'll just stop right there before we go on. So this is a story that probably many of you are familiar with. And, for the most part, as my mind was reading this time, it was reading a story at this point, like a build-up, rather than, sometimes when we read the teachings, my mind is just going boom, 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 boom with all of this stuff that is coming in. This time I just, there was just more of a buildup. But the one place where my mind really paused was this. When Jesus said, let's go back to Judea. And of course, that's because this is where Lazarus is. And now Lazarus is dead. And so Jesus is planning, as you all know, to go back there and raise Lazarus from the dead, which at this point in this story will be his greatest miracle. Now, I want you to realize also that not all of the Gospels tell the same story. So in other Gospels, like he raised a young girl from death prior to this, right, prior to this point in his life. So I don't know. You never know. The Gospels don't tell the same story. But in the book of John, this is the first time Jesus has ever done anything like this. So in the book of John, in this version of the story, this is the greatest miracle that's about to happen. So anyway, he wants to go back to Judea so that he can perform this greatest miracle. But as we've seen already, Jesus was in Jerusalem, which is also in Judea. In fact, today, Bethany is like a suburb of Jerusalem. If you go there, it's just like a suburb. They're very close together. So Jesus was just there in Jerusalem, and, they were trying to stone him. And so the disciples who loved Jesus were like, we can't go back there. They want to kill you, right? We can't go back there. And Jesus replies, this is very interesting. He says, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Are there not 12 hours of daylight? First of all, the number 12 is quite interesting. Well, 12 obviously is half of 24. So Jesus seems to be implying that there are two, I'm going to call it thought systems. There are two thought systems. One, which he's referring to now as daylight. And one, which of course would be the nighttime. So Jesus says, are there not 12 hours of daylight? That's like saying, are there not two thought systems that we can listen to, right? And then he says, a man who walks by day will not stumble. And he goes on to say, for he sees by this world's light. And then he says, it is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light. So remember, they've just said, we can't go back to Judea. They're trying to stone you. You know, they're trying to kill you there. And Jesus is saying, basically, there are two thought systems that we can listen to. We can listen to the thought system of the light. And if we listen to the thought system of the light, no matter what the story looks like, no matter whether it looks like I'm going to be stoned or whatever, no matter what the story looks like, if we're listening to the thought system of light and we're following the thought system of light, then we know we will not stumble. We know you could say we know we are taking right action. We know we are doing what is in the best interest of everyone. But if we listen to the thought system of dark, and of course he's implying this thought system that you are listening to right now, which is saying we can't go back there, they'll stone you, this is the thought system of fear. And if we listen to the thought system of fear, right, we will most definitely stumble. So Jesus isn't making any predictions about his future. He's not at this point saying anything like, don't worry, we can go back to Judea. I won't be captured. I won't be stoned. I won't be crucified. He's not saying anything like that at all. What he's saying is, as long as I'm following this inner guidance, whatever happens is right. Whatever happens is right. And in fact, we just listened to the song from Gethsemane, and we know what's coming. You know, we all know this story. We know what's coming. So we know this is going to end in Jesus's arrest and Jesus's beating and Jesus's crucifixion. But what we just heard in the song of Gethsemane was it was facing all of this head on that led to Jesus's next shift. So let's imagine a Jesus that didn't face all of this head on. Let's imagine a Jesus that ran. I have been to the Garden of Gethsemane 3 times. Twice, we privately reserved it, so we were there alone. And so we really had time to be in the Garden of Gethsemane without a lot of other tourists and to really contemplate Jesus's time in the Garden of Gethsemane. And when I'm in the Garden of Gethsemane and I look around, of course now Jerusalem is a bigger city, but I look around, I realize I can see where the old city is and I can see how far away we are from the old city. And I realize there was nothing beyond this but wilderness. Jesus was basically in the middle of nowhere. And remember, when he went into the Garden of Gethsemane, most of the disciples he left further away. He brought Peter, John, and James with him a little closer, but he even left them. And he went into the garden by himself to pray. Jesus could have ran. He could have. The whole wild wilderness was open to him, and there was nothing there to block him. It was the middle of the night, and even the 3 disciples that were closest, as we know, were asleep. They fell asleep, right? He could have hightailed it out of there and avoided the whole thing. Why didn't he? Well, he's telling us right here. He's saying, as long as I listen to the thought system of light, I am not stumbling, regardless of what happens. If I listen to the thought system of dark, I stumble. That is so simple. You know, you don't have to analyze a situation if you think that way. You don't have to say, okay, well, let's look at this here. Okay, guys, let's all have a discussion. Let's look at this. Okay, so my friend Lazarus is dead. I could go back and raise him from the dead. But if I do, that might bring more attention to me, and I might end up being stoned or arrested and crucified. Nobody really expects me to raise Lazarus from the dead, so I don't really have to do that. I'm not going to disappoint anybody. Right? I could just avoid this whole thing. What do you guys think? What should I do? Yeah, Jesus, let's avoid it. Let's avoid it. Right? Jesus doesn't have to go. let's go the other way. Jesus doesn't have to go through this analytical process. He doesn't have to decide for himself what he thinks is in his best interest. All he has to do is feel intuitively, what am I to do now? And it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It doesn't matter if the decision is completely the opposite of what all of the disciples want. If he knows within himself, this is what I am to do, and he does it, he knows it's the right decision. And it's not the right decision because it's going to end up securing his safety. It's not the right decision because of any outcome in form. He's not saying it's the right decision because. He's simply saying it's the right decision. So the question for us, all right, because Jesus is dropping a little lesson here, and then the story just goes on. The story just goes on. You got to wonder how many people even pay attention to the little lesson that's dropped here. The question for us is, how do we make decisions? Are we feeling for those two different thought systems, the one we call ego and the one I call wisdom or intuition? And are we feeling, okay, I can feel this comes from ego. Fine, I simply won't do it because it's ego. That's enough reason not to follow that guidance. Ego gives guidance too. I won't follow that. Or, okay, I can feel this is my intuition, and I will do it, period, without any reasons other than I'm going to call it the source. The source. If the source is ego, don't listen. If the source is inner wisdom, do. And nothing else matters. The outcome doesn't matter. What other people think about it doesn't matter. I'm only doing it because of which thought system it came from. Or I'm not doing it because of which thought system it came from. So again, Jesus says, are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light. Period. And then the story goes on. So let me get you back into the story, and then we'll continue with the story. So Jesus is saying, you know, that his friend Lazarus fell asleep, which they also did not understand. To them, that's just a better reason not to go. He's just asleep. Why should we go there and put your life at risk? Just because he's sleeping, he'll wake up. And Jesus is like, no. No, you don't understand. He's dead. He's dead. Now, they still don't know what's coming in the book of John. In the book of John, the little girl was never raised from the dead. So they can't even imagine that Jesus is going to raise Lazarus from the dead. What the disciples do think is happening is that Jesus is going to die. And so this becomes a slightly interesting comment when Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. They think that Jesus is going to die, and they're going along. The only reason to me that is important is because at some point on this spiritual path, no matter what we thought this spiritual path was about, at some point on this spiritual path, we realize that this person that I've always called me is going to die. If I don't wake up first, this person's going to die a bodily death. But if I do wake up, this person's going to die the final death. The book of Revelation calls it the second death. Because the first death, which is the bodily death, really isn't a death at all. Nothing dies. The ego doesn't die. Nothing dies in that first death. And this is where the theory of reincarnation comes about. Because nothing died, there has to be another birth, right? But in awakening, in the final death, the second death, something does die, ends, and never returns. That's what we mean by die. Ends and never returns. And that's the sense of individual personhood. That's what we call me. Now, it's funny because in this lifetime, we would think of me as Regina. But me is actually more than that. Because, again, assuming the theory of reincarnation is a true experience, not ultimate truth, but a true experience, well, then I haven't always been Regina, have I? I've been, you know, God knows who. I don't know who. But what's consistent through all of those personalities was the sense of a me. It may have been different me's, but it was always me, a very distinct me. Well, somewhere along the way, on this spiritual path, it dawns on the mind that if I continue that me, that personal sense of self, is going to die. From the mind's point of view, from the ego's point of view, I am going to die. And somewhere a decision needs to be made. If we're going to continue, it's like, okay, I get it. I'm going to die. Let's go anyway. And so this is what Thomas is saying. Let us also go that we may die with him. That's a decision we all have to make at some point. All right, let's continue with the story then. The next section of the story is called Jesus Comforts the Sisters. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him. But Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Now, well, let me read the whole story, then I'll come back to that. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who lives in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she told him, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world. And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" So again, in this version of the story, no one has been raised from the dead before. By the way, it might interest you to know, what I just said is a little bit of a mistake. It's not that no one had been raised from the dead before. It's that Jesus had never raised anyone from the dead before in this version of the story. Elijah, way back in the Old Testament, did raise a boy from the dead. So the Jews are familiar with the concept of raising someone from the dead. This is in their Jewish history already. But in the John version of the story, Jesus has never done that. It was only done, you know, hundreds of years ago by Elijah, who they have on a pedestal. And remember, most of the Jews do not have Jesus on a pedestal. He's just another guy, right? Just another guy, a little annoying. He's an annoying guy, but there's nothing special about him. So they aren't really expecting Jesus to raise anyone from the dead. All right, so when we listen to this story, Jesus clearly tells Martha, "Your brother will rise again." And she doesn't really hear him. She says, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Now, this is very important for us, because what she is talking about is a religious belief from her sect of Judaism. Not all Jews believe in the resurrection, but her sect did. So Jesus says, "Your brother will rise again," meaning, you know, in a half an hour when I get there, now, right? Jesus says, "Your brother will rise again," and she can't even hear him because she's blinded by spiritual concepts. The first words out of her mouth are, "I know. I know." One thing we want to look at is when we do that. One thing that Elie Ruzdahl also talks about is how people say things like, "I know I'm awareness, but la 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 la, here are my problems." Right? When we say, "I know," do we actually know from direct experience? Or are we jumping in the head, spitting out learned spiritual concepts, and therefore blocking something that's right there trying to teach us or awaken us right now? Sometimes what happens here in the sanctuary is someone will be teaching. In fact, the other night we had Michael Langford in here teaching, not live, but the audios. Michael Langford is extremely clear, in my humble opinion. And there wasn't a lot of typing on the board, which I was really happy to see. I think people were really listening. But there was a little bit of that kind of typing happening on the board. That "I know" typing. And you could just sense the obstacle, the disregarding. And in fact, it was kind of funny because this was happening, and then Michael in the audio talks about how some of the ways that the ego keeps us from realizing truth, accepting the teachings, digesting the teachings, is one, by disagreeing with the teachings. And even as he's saying this, there were a couple people typing disagreement. Now, it's not that we're not allowed to disagree. I don't want to be misheard here. It's not that we're all supposed to be like little soldiers marching in a row and not using discernment. I'm not trying to say that. But at the same time, we want to make sure we're using discernment. We want to make sure it isn't just our spiritual ego blocking additional clarity. When I'm listening in the room, I almost never type a comment. And I'll tell you why. Because when I see a comment come up in my mind, I look at it. Most of the time, the comments are coming from the ego. And so I don't type it. I let it go. When I look at the comment and it feels like inspiration, true inspiration, in other words, it seems to be helping along or going along with the current inspiration rather than, you know, trying to avoid it or something, then I type it. And often, it's so funny. Probably 75% of what I type is word for word what the speaker just said. You know, I'm just echoing what they just said that was so clear. And what's also funny is about half of the time, if not 75% of the time that I do that, the speaker goes, oh yeah, look what Regina's saying. And they read it because they didn't even notice that they said it, right? And so all I'm doing is saying what they said. And now they're getting the clarity because somehow, you know, it didn't really register even though they said it. So it's kind of funny. But the point is, I make sure I'm not using this board in this holy sanctuary to enliven my ego, to cling to my spiritual beliefs, to hold on to I know. And remember, you have two thought systems. And whenever you listen to the dark thought system, you stumble, which means even if you type in this room from your ego, you are stumbling. Well, let me ask you this. What is your purpose for coming to the sanctuary? Is it to stumble? What is your purpose for coming to the sanctuary? Is it to stumble? At least not the Awakening Together members. You know, they're not coming here to stumble. They are coming here out of a sincere desire. So why not, before typing on the board, just kind of look and see, what is this coming from? Is this coming from the ego, from even my spiritual ego, my I know? Or is this a part of the inspiration that's flowing? Am I joining in on the inspiration? No. Type away, or a genuine question sometimes, you know, type away. So this is what we see Mary doing here. She's like, Jesus is giving direct information. She's the first one to hear this information. Nobody knows that Jesus is going to, he hasn't been this clear that he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. He's telling her very directly, your brother will rise again. And she says, I know, blah, 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 blah. She blocks it. Now, fortunately, she's going to get another chance in about 30 minutes to see it. So, but again, when we listen to the Bible, we want to listen for our benefit. These stories are a lot of fun, but we want to listen for our benefit. So what Martha is helping us see here is that tendency we have to say, I know, and therefore not listen. Right? Jesus does answer her again. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. Now again, people often got Jesus' words confused with the body of this man named Jesus of Nazareth. But he very clearly says, I am. I am the resurrection and the life. Hold on just one moment. I'm going to grab another book. I want to read something to you that I read this morning from I Am That. I Am That, Nisargadatta Maharaj. If I can find it. Ah, here we go. He says, there's a spiritual student asking him, what am I to do? Asking Nisargadatta for instructions. And Nisargadatta says, try to be, only to be. The all-important word is try. Allot enough time daily for sitting quietly and trying, just trying, to go beyond the personality. Don't ask how. It cannot be explained. You just keep on trying until you succeed. If you persevere, there can be no failure. What matters supremely is sincerity, earnestness. You must have grown tired of being the person you are. Now see the urgent need of being free of this unnecessary self-identification. After all, you are what you are every moment of your life, but you are never conscious of it except maybe at the point of awakening from sleep. All you need is to be aware of being, not as a verbal statement, but as an ever-present fact. The awareness that you are will open your eyes to what you are. It is all very simple. Establish a constant contact with yourself. Be with yourself all the time. Now listen to this. I am is a tiny seed which will grow into a mighty tree quite naturally without a trace of effort. Now Jesus is saying, I am the resurrection and the life. Nisargadatta is basically saying, focus on the I am, which he also calls being. Focus on the I am. It is a tiny seed which will grow into a great tree. Jesus told us in the book of Mark that the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed, which is the tiniest of seeds, which will grow into the greatest of garden plants. What we are being told is that focusing on life, focusing on isness, focusing on beingness, focusing on awareness, focusing on I am, focusing on presence, whatever word you want to use, it's all talking about the same thing. Focusing on that is what awakens us, resurrects us to our truth. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. What he wants to do is he wants to point attention to life, not personality, life, living life. That's what he wants to point attention to, that living life has no end. Now, this is going to be an amazing miracle, raising Lazarus from the dead. It's like a big show. But the truth is, we don't need that big show. Because life is right here, right now, for each and every one of us. We don't need to wait for some big show. We can right now say, okay, I get it. I've heard master after master after master say the same thing. I am sick and tired of wasting my own time. I'm sick and tired of suffering. I'm ready to listen. I am going to focus on being, isness, I am, presence, awareness, whatever you want to call it. I am ready to listen. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, even though he dies, right? He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. What dies? How can you live even though you die? It's the ego death. It's the sense of personal self.
Awakening is realizing I am not this. I am this. Right? That's what awakening is. I'm not this little limited this. I am this. Yeah, die before you die. So he's going to use Lazarus merely as a symbol to focus attention on the life that we all have right here, right now. And he's telling us that focusing attention on life, isness, presence, that is your path to awakening. That's the resurrection. It's that simple. You don't need to learn anything. You just have to know where to put your attention. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die, right? Because once you awaken to your true self and the ego has died its final death, then you know who you are. You can never go back to sleep. Never go back to sleep. And so she's saying, yes, she trusts him. She believes him. Of course, we know that she doesn't really understand, but that's okay. She's about to experience something incredible. Let's see. So, and then Mary comes to him, and he asks Mary, where have you laid Lazarus? And they're pointing the way. They're pointing the way. Here's where Lazarus is. So they're heading that way. And the story will continue. We don't have time now to go into it, but the story will continue. The next thing that we'll read, which now will be 2 weeks from today, since Elie Ruzdahr will be here next week, Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, followed by the plot to kill Jesus. So, so it's moving right along just as the disciples feared. But what we want to take away from today, probably just a couple things we want to make sure we remember, is that there are two thought systems. We all know this. This isn't new. There are two thought systems. And when we feel moved to do something or to say something, it is always coming from just one of those two thought systems. We don't even have to think about, we don't have to analyze what we're feeling moved to do or what we're feeling moved to say. All we have to do is take a moment to check with discernment, which thought system is this coming from? If we get the sense that this is coming from the ego, from me, from what I want, my will, my point of view, right? That's what I mean by ego. It's coming from me, the personality. Then it's probably pretty good just to let the urge go right on by and not act on it, not say it, not type it in the room. But if we look and it feels like inspiration, intuition, spiritual wisdom, then do it. And if we follow the thought system of light, we never stumble. And again, we're not doing it because of a specific outcome. We're doing it simply because it came from the thought system of light. If we follow the thought system of light, we never stumble. If we follow the thought system of dark, we always stumble. Even if it results in my personal safety for now, it's still a stumble. At least it's a stumble if my goal is awakening to truth. And as we're doing that, as we're watching to see which thought system this urge to speak or do is coming from, also remember that the spiritual ego is a part of the ego thought system. Right? So watch that spiritual ego. Don't let it trick you just because it uses spiritual words. The ego is the ego is the ego, and you can get to know what it feels like. And then the fact that it wants to type in, you know, hey, you're wrong. Here's the truth. You know, it's still the ego, and you can say, you know what? I don't need to say that. Just let that person, let them be. I don't need to get involved in this discussion, right? I'll just listen for what is being said that's for me, or if I realize that this really isn't for me, maybe I'll leave and go ask intuition what I should be doing with my time. Because time is precious. Elie Ruzar told us each day is like a gold coin. And you have to ask, how am I going to spend this gold coin? And we heard Michael Langford on Sunday night telling us something very, very similar. He said, if you watch a two-hour TV show, he said, you've just wasted 120 minutes. He says, are you going to live 1,000 additional lives of suffering because of 120 minutes? Is it that important? That was his way of pointing to the same thing. How do we use our time? Is it the most effective use of time for me and my path of awakening? Always a question worth asking. And don't let guilt answer, because guilt, of course, is the ego. You got to learn to tune in, learn the difference between those two thought systems. All right, that's it for today. I'm going to just pause for a moment, turn on some music, and then we will begin prayer circle.